So I am the chair of this section. I've been working with the West End Revitalization Association since I was a master's student, and now I'm assistant research professor at the University of South Carolina. I'm actually presenting for Omega Wilson, who's going to do the presentation, but Omega is sick. So I'm just going to do the presentation, and I'll take a couple quick questions after I'm done. I'll try to get through it pretty quickly, because I actually have to leave myself. So we're created sort of a community-owned and managed research approach, which is similar to a community-based particular research approach, which is sort of on the same tree as CBPR, but a different branch. And I'll give you more information about COMER. So we call it, it's community-owned and managed research, but we call it COMER. So in Spanish, that means to eat. But it's not comer, but we call it COMER. So it's very similar to CBPR, and so I'll get more into why they created it. But, if you think about environmental justice issues, particularly when you think about the locally wanted land uses, the environmental hazards, the environmental externalities, you have in many EJ communities, they're also disproportionately burdened by a high concentration of psychosocial stressors, crime, violence, poverty, social disorder. Then you also have the third part of that is they have limited access to what we call health-promoting infrastructure, and those are basic amenities. So think about public health and the sanitation movement. We have many low-income communities of color, particularly in semi-urban and rural areas, and also in the urban areas, who don't have sewer and water infrastructure. So that means if you don't have sewer and water infrastructure, that means you potentially don't have a healthy neighborhood, and that means that the people who live in those neighborhoods are potentially are not healthy as well. So thinking about sewer and water, paved roads, access to emergency services. So many of these communities are what we call pre-New Deal communities. Oh, I forgot that. Bad order. I have no relationships to disclose this up. My wife and my little baby. That's it. And my mom. And my mother-in-law. Okay, that's enough. Mother-in-law. So in many cases, when you talk about EJ communities, you see a disparities exist in the basic amenities. So there's differential access to basic amenities. So the Western Revitalization Association is a community-based EJ organization that organized in 1995 to address inequities in planning and zoning and the lack of basic amenities, and also related environmental health disparities due to sort of what we call extraterritorial jurisdiction, which I would define a little bit later, in Mebane, North Carolina. And Mebane is a small town, about 7,000 people, that's west of Chapel Hill. So if you know what Chapel Hill is, raise your hand. Then you go west, like you're going towards Greensboro. So what are basic amenities? As I just kind of said those, they're basic building blocks in neighborhoods. So neighborhoods without basic amenities are less resilient, have lower quality of life, and less sustainability. So you think about your neighborhoods as sort of community ecosystems. Those are the ecologic features that make the ecosystem. So if you think of the ecosystem as sort of a living, breathing organism, if you don't have the healthy features of the ecosystem, that means the living, breathing organism is not healthy. And so the populations and individuals that reside within that ecosystem are also not healthy. So the issues in Mebane, like I said, it's a small southern town. You have planning inequities, dead end street, lack of paved roads. Think about as simple as not having gutters. So if you have a rain event, you don't have gutters, what happens? The runoff runs off into the yard instead of being collected by the gutter. So you have all the chemicals on the roads get into the yards. And if you have septic tanks that are breaking down, that means your fecal waste is getting into your well water. And then the septic tank acts as a non-point source pollution for the reservoir for the surface waters. So you have issues with the Clean Water Act, with surface waters, you have issues with the Safe Drinking Water Act, with the well water. And you think about the Safe Drinking Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act does not cover wells. It doesn't cover individual wells. So 30% of our population in this country live where? In rural communities. So most of those people are probably still on well water. So it's still a big issue. So you think about Jon Snow, cholera, back then, think about cholera in Haiti right now. Water is still a huge issue, globally and in the U.S. So they also have issues with the ETJ. The ETJ is the extraterritorial jurisdiction that so cities have a certain purview of land outside their city limits where they can do zoning, planning, and development. And many times those people who live in the ETJ, they have no rights to vote. They have no political representation. So it's almost like instead of being taxation without representation, it's like being polluted without representation. So many cases in semi-urban and rural communities, the ETJ is where you put the landfill, the industrial corridor, the incinerator, That's where a lot of the environmental hazards go, while at the same time, people who live in those communities don't have sewer and water infrastructure. And then we have issues in Medmen, old school, sort of old South values, a lot of discrimination, racism, and you see noncompliance with civil rights laws and EJ regulations. So we're developed this community-owned managed research approach, and sort of in reaction to the partnerships they had developed with some UNC researchers who wanted to be very more extractive and use them for data collection and use them for guinea pigs and do scientific racism. And so in response to that scientific racism that we're experiencing, they basically kicked the UNC researchers out, got some legal partners to help them fire the UNC researchers, and they created their own community-driven research approach. So COMA was a very much a reactionary community-driven research method. The community group didn't know anything about CBPR, but they knew they needed to collect their own data to do ground truthing and get their own data, because Omega always says, who's the community leader, if we own the problems, we should own the solutions. And so it's more of a reactionary sort of approach because of the bad experience that we're having with some UNC researchers who want to use them for, basically use the community for guinea pigs. So they formed a partnership with some researchers that are more informed, and including myself when I was a student, also Chris Haney. Is Chris in here? No. Chris is not here yet. Chris Haney, Dr. Steve Wing, and some other researchers at UNC who were more open-minded about respecting the community's contextual expertise. If you think about community members who are impacted by these issues, they're living with it every day, so they're contextual experts. I'm a technical expert, so you need both sets of knowledge base to really solve the problem. So the technical expertise is necessary, the contextual expertise is necessary to really solve problems. So what we did is train community members to be community monitors, to use the aseptic technique to collect water samples. We train community members to do environmental health workshops. We also help develop a cross-sectional survey with the community members to do an infrastructure assessment for both the household infrastructure and also the sewer and water infrastructure on their property. And we did this to really help empower communities to build the capacity to sort of do their own research. So just a little bit, West End, White Level, Perry Hill, Buckhorn, those are communities that make up where neighborhoods. They're post-slavery neighborhoods. They're mainly elderly and low income. One of the issues that we had, this is just a map that kind of shows Mebane. You see the ETJ zones are the gray, so the neighborhoods are in the gray, ETJ. And then the highway that was being built was going to basically displace the two, White West End and White Level, and you see the highway was going to connect to the Mill Creek Country Club community, so it was going to destroy the post-slavery black communities and connect to the more affluent community. So you have the issue of sewer water infrastructure disparities, plus the issues in inequities in planning and zoning, where the community members were not involved for 15 years in the planning this highway. At the same time, if you look at the little purple X, West End residents are right across the street from the sewer treatment plant, but they weren't connected to the sewer lines. At the same time, West End residents host orphan landfills. They host the hazardous waste sites. So you see the environmental hazards they're being burdened by. They're also very poor. They have some crime issues, the psychosocial stressors, and then also the lack of access to help promote infrastructure, the sewer, water, paved roads, gutters, some of the basic things that all neighborhoods need to be healthy. And so COMA really equals bringing science to community organizing. So like I said before, bringing in my technical expertise, the expertise of other academic partners to really marry with the contextual expertise of the community members. So it allows community members to really collect data to actually solve their local environmental justice problems. So you have science, community organizing, plus civic engagement. Science, community organizing, plus civic engagement. So COMA is really about equity and sort of the funding, parity, and management of the project. It's really about, you know, focusing on equity and power distribution, really working with informed partners, and seeking collecting the data to seek compliance with environmental laws and regulations to mitigate the negative health conditions. So to operationalize COMA, we adapted the EPA's collaborative problem-solving model approach, which is an approach that was really created through a collaborative process that was done by State Representative Harold Mitchell from South Carolina in Spartanburg to look at issues in his community. So the EPA adapted that model and became a national model for different stakeholders to work together to do consensus building, conflict resolution, resource leverage and mobilization to really come together to address local environmental health issues. And so, that's not good. I'll skip that. So the way we kind of built the relationships and made people accountable to each other in the partnership through this collaborative process was through we created work groups and all the partners signed MOUs. So you signed an MOU to say what your role and responsibility would be on the project. And you had to adhere to those roles and responsibilities. If not, it was a lever that the steering committee could use to remove you, basically, if you didn't do what you said you were going to do. So just a couple pictures. That's me and Chris, 20 pounds lighter. At least Chris is probably the same size. I'm a little bigger. So results of the approach, the fact that they collected this data and used this community-owned managed research approach, they were able to use the data and put in an administrative complaint, so they've been able to block the highway for almost 10 years now. So this small community group has been able to block a major, you know, multi-million dollar highway for about 10 years, using this administrative complaint and collecting their own data. They've also had a sustained partnership with Inform UNC researchers and other partners for over 10 years, and also been able to really train other community groups and other community leaders on how they can use Comer to adapt it to that particular environmental health issue. So here's just some pictures of some of the work that was done. Here's a newspaper article about the bypass, and the same picture again. And here's some pictures of the roads being paved for the first time and first time installation of sewer and water infrastructure. And we were able to use the data to actually get block grants to connect 91 homes. But that's still only phase one. We still have another 400 homes to go. So this is sort of lauded as a national model where I received the EPA EJ Achievement Award. But we did 91 homes. So that if this is a great model, think about all the problems that are out there. Think how much more work we have to do. Oh, sorry, go on. So to evaluate this partnership, we got the R03 grant, as Liam mentioned. And what we wanted to do is to evaluate the impact of Comer and the collaborative problem solving model process. We want to impact the career and pipeline development core. What they basically had, we're trained students from the community on different issues and took them to field trips, sort of got them opportunities to be exposed to the issues. And now some of those students who went through that program are on the board for WERA. Because if you think about these issues, many of the EJ groups, you may have a strong civic engagement but low organizational capacity. So you may have a core group of people who are doing all the work, but over time you get worn down, and as like Omega, you get sick. And so the idea is to replenish the organization by training youth from the community to really be engaged in the process, and then they become part of the leadership fabric of the community group. So that's what we were able to do. And so, let me see, skip that too. Oh, wait a second. I didn't put the right slides in. Omega has some different slides. So if you think about the evaluation piece, what we really did, I'll go back to that slide. What we really did was we did semi-structured interviews. We also had semi-structured interviews and also surveys. And so we asked people about how they felt about participating in the research process. And I thought I had quotes, and this maybe it's not the right version that I sent. But what we basically have done, we're going through a process of doing a qualitative analysis using in vivo to basically look at things from the semi-structured interviews. And so actually one of my students, who is not here either, she presented a poster. she's presenting a poster tomorrow, actually, which goes into more detail about the qualitative analysis of the semi-structured interviews. But basically what we've been able to do through this grant is actually to train other community groups in North Carolina, including RENA, which is the Rogers Road Neighborhood Association. They're actually impacted by a landfill issue and lack of basic amenities in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And then you also have other community partners like REACH, who are represented here, who are impacted by the lack of basic amenities and also industrial hog farms in eastern North Carolina. So, let me see. So I talked about the EPA Achievement Award. Omega Wilson kind of went from doing local level environmental health policy work, and he was on NEJAC for a while. He's retired from NEJAC now. So he was able to take Comer, sort of community facilitated strategies, and take that up to the national level to try to get that sort of put in a sort of national EJ policy initiatives. And what else? And so the partnership, this Comer approach and this research has really led to more participation of community members in the project. Unfortunately, even with the progress that's been made with the 91 homes, the fact that Omega is doing research and Omega is doing work at the national level with the community leaders back home, there's still some mistrust because you're off doing this leadership stuff, but we still have these problems. You know, so that's another thing that we learned through the interviews. People are excited about what's been done so far and the research, but you kind of have to check in with folks, just like in a marriage. How are you doing? How are we doing? And then, so what's happened is some folks have some concerns about the amount of time put in investment in the national stuff. So Omega's now pulling back to really refocus on the revitalization efforts at the local level. And so that's, I'll end there, and I'll take a few questions, and thank you for your attention.
Since Jacoby's not going to be here at the end, we'll go ahead and take a couple questions now for him and the Coomer Project.
Any questions? Sure, no questions? EJ, community leaders who got scholarships, none of y'all have his questions? Well, somebody else has a question, I'll come back to you. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Amy from Amy Lieberman from Migrant Permissions Network. And I've been just a little curious when you're talking about the rural water systems and the Clean Water Act. And I'm wondering if can you just give a little bit more detail about your approach to how you frame that to sort of get policy changes made?
Yeah, so what we basically, part of what we did, and I didn't talk about, is that we did some community level mapping, actually mapped the infrastructure. So I have maps where we show where the sewer lines go and where the sewer lines don't go, and the water lines go and the water lines don't go. And so what you see is, when you look at the ETJ boundaries of those neighborhoods, the sewer water lines stop for all those neighborhoods. So we did that first, and then what we did, we set up a study where we had sites that had infrastructure, because actually some people in West End did have some connection to the water, to the water lines. So we collected data, collected water samples, and looked at fecal indicators. So we looked at Enterococcus, E. coli, fecal coliforms, and also coliforms, which is an indicator for viruses. So we did that in the water samples of both the well water, the surface water, and also the control sites. So that's where we showed that we had high levels of those indicators for viruses. And also we did turbidity study. We did turbidity as well, looked at turbidity. And so high levels above the maximum contaminant limits that EPA has. But at least to the Clean Water Act, we also checked around creeks and streams that were near their homes because, you know, of course there was runoff into those creeks and streams. And that's where we saw there were also high levels of those fecal indicators in those creeks and streams. So you think about the Clean Water Act, is actually in play the creeks and streams, but there's really no protections as it relates to well water, unless it's a state level law. In many cases, they're really, that's like a gap in our law. And you think about, if you do have a septic tank that's breaking down and that's releasing waste, are you going to tell the health department? No. Why? What happens? They condemn your property. So it's a form of takings. So they can take your property. So through that kind of process, that's kind of expulsive planning. You can actually get rid of people that way. You take the property, and guess what happens? They come in and build new neighborhood to get tax base, and then they can annex that neighborhood. It wasn't annexed before that. Then they use annexation and bring them in to bring that tax base in. So that's what happens a lot in these small towns and how people don't have infrastructure. If you talk and you tell them, you're gonna lose your property. So people don't do it. So they'd rather continue to deal with the problem, live with the problem, because if they do tell somebody, they can lose their property. Okay?
All right.
Thank you.
Jacoby, thank you very much.